Chapter 11. Inside the Warehouse. In Augusta, I got a room at a motel and asked for a city map. I studied the map carefully and found 18 hotels. I rang each hotel, asking for Paul Lennon. Nothing. I got to the 15th hotel.
Room 120,
the woman said. I breathed out slowly. I drove to the hotel, went straight to room 120, and knocked on the door.
Reacher,
Hubble said. He couldn't believe it. I hurried him out to the Bentley.
Why do you have Charlie's car? He asked.
She lent it to me. She wanted me to find you, I explained.
How did you find me?
He asked.
I thought no one could.
It was my job in the military police. I found a lot of soldiers who ran away, I said. You had no ID, so you couldn't fly or rent a car. You could only use the bus. You chose Augusta because it's a big city that Charlie often visits. I knew from the map book in her car. Maybe she's from Augusta. And you use the name Lennon because you love the Beatles and you like John Lennon best. You have all his music in your house, but people usually use their own first name.
But how did you know which hotel?
He asked. You arrived by bus, and you were tired. You didn't want to walk a long way or be too near the main road, I answered.
That's smart, he said, shaking his head. How are things in Margrave?
Bad, I said. I told him about Charlie and the kids. He was quiet for a moment.
You have to get them back, he said.
I will, but I need your help. I drove on fast toward Margrave. How did you get into all this? I said.
I lost my job, he replied. I couldn't tell Charlie, and I was angry and worried. I earned a lot of money at the bank, but we were spending a lot. Then Kleiner offered me a job, finding $1 bills. I didn't know why. He paid me well. After a while, he told me about the scam. I was very unhappy and wanted to get out, but he threatened me. I had to look after the money going out, too, and I had an office at the warehouse. Sherman Stoller was the driver. He went out with $1 million bills every week.
And he was stealing some of the bills, I said.
Yes, I was worried that I might get into trouble as well, he said.
What about Joe? I asked.
Was that your brother's name?
He said.
I couldn't call the police because of Morrison, or the FBI because of Picard. So I called the Treasury.
We stopped for gas, and I filled a bottle too, and bought some matches. Okay, Hubble, here's the plan, I said when I got back in the car. At midnight, we were back in Margrave. First, Hubble got his Bentley, and I followed him into town. He stopped at the fire station and then drove his Bentley back hard into the fire station door. I ran through the broken door and found a bolt cutter. Then, Hubble pointed his car at the police station and drove it fast into the doors. The Bentley stopped in the middle of the office area. Finley was in a cell, handcuffed to the bars. Hubble kept moving the car on, trying to get to the cell. It reached the bars and broke them open. I cut off the handcuffs with the bolt cutter, Finley took a gun from his desk, and we all ran out to Charlie's Bentley. "You okay?" I said to Hubble. He didn't look good.
"I'll live," he said, and smiled.
"Good job, Richa," Finley said. "But what now?" The warehouse. Roscoe and Charlie are there. I know from the sound on the tape. Hubble told us about the warehouse. His office was 40 feet up, with a window over the huge area below and stairs down. There was also a fire escape at the back, on the outside of the building. As we got near the warehouse, I turned off the car lights. I put on my jacket and checked the pockets. Gun, blackjack, bottle of gas, matches. Finley carried the bolt cutter. We went across a field, past the dead tree to the fence. Finley cut a hole in it with the bolt cutter, and we stepped through. We went to the bottom of the fire escape and stopped. I listened carefully. They might have a guard outside. I made a small noise and went to the corner of the building, my back close to the wall. Then I looked around the corner. Baker was there, worried about the noise. He looked along the fence, saw the big hole, and started to run towards it. I hit him hard with the blackjack, and he dropped to the ground. We waited 5 minutes, listening hard. Nobody came. We climbed the fire escape very quietly. Me first, then Finley, and Hubble behind him. At the top, Hubble unlocked the door. We waited and listened again. Nothing. The office was bright. Light was coming through the window from the warehouse. My heart stopped. Hubble's children were asleep on the office floor, still in their school clothes. I pointed at Hubble to get his daughter and for Finley to take the boy. "Take them to the car," I said very quietly. "Finley, come back, but Hubble, stay there." They carried the children down the fire escape, into the dark. I listened hard. I could hear something below in the huge warehouse. I moved along the ground toward the window and looked down. What I saw looked unreal. In the middle of the warehouse was a huge mountain of dollar bills. Teal was at one end, sitting at the bottom of the mountain, holding a gun. Kleiner was closer to me, higher up the mountain, a gun in his hand too. Between him and Teal, Roscoe and Charlie were putting dollar bills into air conditioner boxes. They looked terrible, their faces gray. I heard a noise behind me. It was Finley. His eyes opened wide as he looked through the window.
"Can you believe that?"
he said quietly. I gave Finley the bottle of gas and the matches, and he went down the fire escape. I watched the big door at the end of the warehouse. Kleiner got up, put down his gun, and kicked a new river of dollars toward the two women. 7 minutes later, I saw the ground near the big door turn dark and wet as the gas came under the door. I picked up my gun. Then I could see fire under the door, moving toward the bottom of the huge green mountain. Teal stared at it, unable to move, and I shot him quickly. I turned the gun on Kleiner, but he was moving the other way, to get Teal's gun. The next second, there was the noise of a door opening loudly below, and Picard appeared.
His jacket was gone, and his white shirt was a dirty red. He was moving toward the women, a gun in his hand, but he was looking up at me. At the same moment, Kleiner was picking up Teal's gun. The fire was growing fast. I shot Picard, and he hit the floor in a shower of red. I moved the gun straight back to Kleiner, who was ready to shoot me. I got there first, hitting Kleiner in the chest. Immediately, a storm of paper flew up as he fell, and the dollar bills quickly caught fire. I ran down to the warehouse floor. The fire was getting bigger, and the air was filling with smoke. I ran straight into Picard, dropping my gun. He got to his feet, hitting out at me wildly. I moved under his arm and hit him as hard as I could in the neck. He just stepped nearer and pushed me into the fire. I threw my burning jacket at him, but he knocked it away. There was no hope. Suddenly, six shots rang out behind him, and Picard fell to the floor. Finley was there. Finley took Charlie and ran. Roscoe and I followed them out toward the hole in the fence. Behind us, fire shot 100 feet into the air as the roof of the warehouse flew off. I could see Hubble standing by the Bentley. Finley and Charlie were getting into the back, and we jumped in after them. The children were in the front, next to Hubble, screaming. A mile down the road, Hubble stopped the car. Everyone fell out, shouting and kissing and crying. Then, the seven of us turned to watch the fire, which was growing bigger and bigger. The night sky was full of burning dollar bills, like 1 million orange stars. Hubble drove quietly back to town and dropped Roscoe and me at her place. We pulled a heavy table against the broken front door and shut the world outside. There were too many problems for Roscoe and me. I was angry with myself about everything. Roscoe nearly died because of me. She didn't agree with that, but I didn't believe her. And when I told her about Friday night at Hubble's house, she went quiet. Most of all, Roscoe couldn't leave Margrave. It was her home. And I couldn't stay. I wanted the open road and a new place every day. Next day, she drove me to the bus station in Macon. I kissed her goodbye, got on a bus for California, and didn't look back. Penguin Readers, Killing Floor, Lee Child, Level 4. Retold by Kate Williams. Illustrated by Kevin Hopgood. Series editor, Sorrel Pitts. Read by Christopher Ragland. Copyright, Penguin Books Limited, 2021.